Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
The U.S. Congress won't face unpleasant facts about the world energy situation, and as a result, it makes bad policy. The same thing is happening on the state level. Vermont's lone congressional representative, Democrat Peter Welch, is a case in point. Earlier this year, he introduced legislation to stop additions to the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which was at about 70% of its congressionally mandated capacity. He claimed that the oil the U.S. was buying to put aside for an emergency was driving up the worldwide price of oil, and his legislation put an end to filling the reserve until oil prices dropped to $50 a barrel. The legislation passed and was signed into law in early May, with the ceiling on oil prices raised to $75 a barrel in the final bill. What happened? I've never seen legislation fail so quickly and visibly before. On May 16th, the U.S. Department of Energy announced that it would not sign contracts to add more oil to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Additions would end in July, after existing contracts expired. Oil closed that Friday at about $120 per barrel, up $5 from the previous week. By the following Wednesday, the price of July futures had jumped to a new record of over $134 per barrel. So much for Welch's hope of lowering oil prices. Peter Welch is at it again. He says that today's high oil prices constitute an emergency, so he calls on George W. Bush to release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve because, he says, that would trigger a drop in oil prices. He's a slow learner, isn't he? One thing I agree with Welch about. We're in an emergency. It looks like the beginning of what James Howard Kunstler calls the long emergency. As world oil production declines after peak oil, climate change kicks in with vigor, and other chickens come home to roost. If we are beginning a long emergency that lasts for decades, it hardly seems a propitious time to tap an emergency reserve that could be sucked dry in 2 years. In the last few years, demand for oil has increased and world oil production has been flat. You'd think that this fact would figure prominently in any discussion of why fuel prices are high, wouldn't you? Increasing demand and stagnant supply mean higher prices in any commodity, whether it's oil or milk or gold. How is it, then, that so many in Congress, like Peter Welch, can speak or write at length about energy and prices without once mentioning the basics of supply and demand? Instead, we see vainglorious proposals like tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or finger-pointing at speculators, as Welch, Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders, and many others in Congress are doing. The same sort of confusion about causes of high fuel prices is evident at the state level, too. I recently attended a press conference in which representatives of Vermont's Republican administration and its majority Democratic legislature sat side by side and explained their joint proposals for addressing this winter's food, fuel, and transportation emergency. At the end of an hour and a half press conference, I asked, "What's going on here? How come oil prices are so high, anyway?" They all looked flustered, and the senator said, "It's something we could discuss over a beer, maybe." Someone else said they probably all had different opinions on it. They were united on solutions for a problem that they didn't agree on the definition of. That's like agreeing on the make and model of the car you're going to rent without agreeing on where you're going to drive it. You can only get so far before agreement breaks down. The chair of the House Appropriations Committee told me, "What does it matter what the cause is, as long as we know Vermont can't affect it?" Well, if you think that Congress can pass some legislation and drop prices, you'll think about doing things differently than if you think that oil prices are likely to continue climbing and the economy, built on cheap energy, is likely to continue unraveling. For example, one of the proposals Vermont's leaders are suggesting is to help homeowners sell equity in their homes so they can buy oil this winter and burn it to keep warm. If the current prices are a blip, that might make some sense. If the homeowners are likely to be in worse financial shape a year from now, and oil prices are even higher then, I don't see that it serves homeowners at all. The Washington Post is finally tackling the story of peak oil. They're not approaching it with the journalistic rigor that they could, but at least it's receiving front-page attention, in a paper read in every congressional office. Maybe that will give folks in Congress the courage to talk about oil supply and demand. And maybe the new habit from Washington will trickle down into the states. For now, I'm afraid there's still a lot of denial and wishful thinking about energy futures in our nation's leaders. I'm Carl Ettinger, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.